Want more stories in your life without adding to your TBR? That's where Audible comes in. I use it for the original novellas, the Plus catalog like Deanna Reborn's Veronica Speedwell series, and those audiobook sales that you can beat. Right now, Audible has a special offer for new and returning members. Click the link in the show notes to see what deal you'll get and start listening today. Welcome to the What to Read Next podcast. In this podcast, your host, Lori Amin, will interview published authors to chat about their work, journey to getting published, and their book recommendations. If you share a passion for books and always looking for your next read, then join us. Welcome to the What to Read Next podcast. Today, I have an author interview with one of my favorite historical fiction authors, Chinelle Clayton. In this interview, we chat about what it was like to transition from writing romance to historical fiction. We chat in depth about her latest release, The Last Train to Key West, and of course, her round of book recommendations. Now let's go to the interview. Hi, Chinelle. Welcome to the What to Read Next podcast.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
So happy to have you here. Just tell us a little bit about yourself.
I write historical fiction, primarily set in 1950s. My new book is actually set in the 1930s, but a lot of my books are inspired by my Cuban ancestry. My family came from Cuba in 1967, and I really grew up on their stories and their memories of home, so I was really inspired by that when I was writing.
Yeah, I love the fact that it's historical fiction, but it's unique enough that you talk about a culture that some people are familiar, but not everyone's familiar. You know, the Cuban, you know, diaspora, like just basically what happens after the revolution and, you know, prior to that and what happens in Cuba. So.
Oh, thank you.
What inspired you to become a writer?
You know, I've always been a reader, and I really think it was kind of that passion for books that inspired me. I really can't remember a time in my life when I didn't have a book in my hand, and books are kind of always those things that, you know, have gotten me through difficult times in my life. So definitely that passion kind of underpinned it. And one day I just kind of thought, why don't I give this a try, and started writing and really just fell in love with the process and the experience.
So what was your journey to get your first book published?
So my first book was actually a historical romance, and I wrote the manuscript in several years, and then I wrote a query letter and queried agents and got a lot of rejections. The book was not very good, and I definitely didn't really understand the industry or really even my craft enough. So I kind of, after I got all those rejections, I sort of reassessed and really decided to kind of rededicate myself to learning more about the business side of publishing and understanding query letters and the process on the path to publication. So I got an internship remotely, actually, with a literary agency in New York. And I read literary submissions and worked on query letters for the agent, submission letters for the agent, and really kind of learned that side of the business, joined some writing organizations, and started writing a new book, which was a young adult manuscript. And that's the book that eventually got me my agent, Kevin Lyon. I've been with her for almost 8 years now. Actually, we didn't sell that book. The publishing process is full of lots of no's. So we submitted that one to publishers. It never sold. But I had gone to university in London and had always kind of played around with the idea of writing about a school like I went to, and ended up writing it, and New Adult was kind of coming up at the time, and that was my first book that sold to a publisher.
And that is one of my favorite books of all time.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, I read it like 5 times, and I'm not a rereader.
Oh, my goodness. Oh,
but I love the series. It's so good.
Thank you very much.
Such a treat. Yeah, I love it. So let's talk about writing. Do you follow an outline, or do you see where the story leads you?
I really see where the story leads me, and I will admit, now that I'm writing historical fiction, I keep telling myself I need to not do that because it definitely makes it more challenging. I think it would be a lot more helpful if I could front load with an outline, but my process just doesn't work that way. So I really just usually start off with kind of a very small shell of an idea, and my publisher and my agent are really wonderful about kind of giving me the green light early on to just figure out where that topic and that path is going to take me.
I love it. And how do you organize yourself as a writer? How do you keep track of your ideas, inspirations, and characters?
I am really devoted to writing in the program Scrivener. So I use that pretty much exclusively. What's really great about it is it has a really wonderful organizational tool for writers. Mm-hmm. So you can make like character templates, you can save research notes, you can actually drop links and websites in there. So it's really easy to kind of cross-reference your research. So really that has kind of been a lifesaver for me with writing historical fiction. I often write with multiple timelines or multiple POVs, and Scrivener is great because it's really easy just to move the scenes. You can kind of color code them and then just shift them around where you need to. Whereas Word is a little bit too, it's a little too hard for me when I'm in there to be able to kind of do all the moving around that I usually do when I'm revising.
I love that. I love like learning about how, you know, authors write and like what they use and what worked. And so I love, you know, hearing about Scrivener and how to use it, which is unique for your, you know, your take on.
Thank you.
Do you share your work along the way, or do you wait till it's completed for others to read?
I don't share my work. I'm kind of funny, and this just kind of goes back to the early days. You know, when I first started writing, I was in law school, and so I wasn't super involved in the writing community. I just like focused on writing the book, and I didn't kind of do as much of the social side of it. And so I didn't really have a lot of people to kind of go to for critiques. So I just would go to my agent. And I think just because I've done that for so long now, it's just really stuck that my first reader is always my agent or my editor, depending on the timeline. And then we go back and forth quite a bit on edits and notes, and then a copy editor will come in and copy edit it. But I usually wait till I have a completed manuscript before I start sharing things.
Yeah, I can imagine. So for a long time, you were a contemporary romance author, and a few years ago, you did a spreadsheet of historical fiction. What are some of the biggest differences in the writing process when it comes to each genre?
I would definitely say with historical fiction, the biggest difference is just the research. And it really goes down to even the words I use in my book, because you often have to make sure that a phrase or a word is correct for the time period. So I use Google Ngram, which is this site that tells you the etymology of words, so you can see if they were in common usage, you know, in the time period. But that's definitely a struggle for me because I have a pretty modern vocabulary. And so I'll often have to say, well, was this phrase in use in 1950? So you have to stop and look it up and see that kind of stuff. So really just every word and sentence, I think you really have to think about the historical accuracy. It's really important to me with historical fiction that my books are historically accurate. I really try not to change the history or deviate from it. It's one of those things that really kind of matters. So it definitely is a lot of research, even for really small details. With my current book, The Last Train to Key West, there was a scene where my character was talking about the scent of depression soap. And, you know, as someone living in 2020, you think about what does soap smell like now, but then you think about what kind of limited availability they had back then. So what materials were they really using to make soap, and what would it have smelled like? And so things like that will often kind of take me down the research rabbit hole as I try to kind of figure out that. So that's probably the biggest difference, I would say, is just having to kind of conform to what history allows and what was historically accurate at the time.
And what do you love about writing historical fiction?
You know, I always learn something new. I mean, I think this job is never boring, regardless of whatever genre you're writing. But with historical fiction, I feel like a lot of things that I didn't learn in school or that I'm unfamiliar with kind of crop back up. And even being Cuban American, you know, there's so much of Cuban history that my family didn't really talk about or that I didn't know about. And so it's been really fascinating to kind of learn this history and then imagine my ancestors, you know, in these situations, and to realize that, you know, that people in my family lived through these events and to kind of see through their eyes maybe what it would have been like.
That's right. So what was it like to get next to him in a big pick by Reese for her big love? How did you hear about it? And what was the most surprising thing about the process?
It was amazing. It was completely unexpected. I mean, it was not something anyone had mentioned as being on the radar. I had no idea. And it happened several months after the book had come out. So You're kind of usually in that quiet lull at that point where, you know, you've had all the release excitement and now the book's just kind of carrying on its own and there's not a lot going on. So it was really just wonderful and very unexpected to get that news. I was at the post office and I just got an email with a bunch of exclamation points, you know, letting me know that she had picked the book. And so, of course, my agent called and we were both crying. And it was just very much a surreal experience that I think still feels like it happened to someone else. So.
It's amazing. I was like, it was just there. I think it just opened up, you know, your books to a new audience.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. Yes. She's really wonderful for giving a space to authors and for promoting books and our stories.
Which is great. So now let's talk about Last Train to Key West. What inspired you to write this story?
Really, the initial inspiration came from the first time I learned about the Labor Day hurricane. So I think it was about when Hurricane Irma was about to hit the United States, and I read an article that had come out about the most powerful hurricanes in history. And one of the hurricanes that was listed was the Labor Day hurricane of 1935. And it just kind of caught me by surprise because I'm originally from Florida, and it was a storm I had never heard of. And when I started hearing about the devastation that it wrought and about the World War I veterans who were caught in the storm's path and how they were basically kind of abandoned by the government, I was really, interested in that story and kind of what I said earlier about learning things that you didn't learn about before and wanting to understand this piece of history. Because I think we talk so much about World War I veterans as being celebrated for what they did. And so this was kind of another side of it I hadn't seen. Mm-hmm. And once that initial kernel came in, I started doing some research. And that's when I learned about Henry Flagler's Overseas Railroad and how it was used to kind of connect the United States with Cuba. And that immediately sent kind of an interest in me of the ease of travel between the two places. I mean, we look at now how difficult it is. But back then, people would just take the railroad, hop on a ferry, and you could be in Havana. And so I started kind of to see this confluence of a lot of different interesting events that I knew I wanted to write about.
So what was your research like to showcase Key West in 1935? Like, what type of resources did you use, or how do you research that to get a sense of the lifestyle there?
So I really try to consume as much as I can about a subject when I'm researching. With the Labor Day hurricane in particular, there's quite a bit of documentation because there were a lot of congressional hearings afterward. About what happened with the veterans. So there was a lot of information on the ground about what exactly was happening with the storm, at what moment in time, when people had information. So things like that were really useful. It was also a little challenging because the story had to be really tightly conforming to this timeline, and my character's actions had to follow where the weather would have been at that moment, at that place on the island. So that part of it, I definitely went to a lot of, the congressional records. There's some really great nonfiction books that have been written on the subject. I use photographs a lot for my research. I just find that really helpful. I was down in the Keys and went to all the different places. You can actually see where the camps were. And that was really helpful just to give me a perspective of how kind of narrow the island is. And even now, I mean, it definitely is a very interesting place. It has really interesting character. And so you can only imagine what it would have been like back in the 30s. Definitely memoirs, interviews of the survivors, things like menus from restaurants that kind of give you an idea of what would have been on the menu, Depression cookbooks. So, my character makes Johnny cakes in one of the scenes, and I research that was something that was popular in that part of the region during the Depression. So really just anything and everything I can, to make it as authentic as possible, documentaries, just really anything I can get my hands on. In this book, there were, like I said, some really good nonfiction books. Hemingway's Hurricane, Last Train to Paradise, Category 5 is another one that's really good. So those were all super helpful in getting information.
Love this. So this book touches upon the Great Depression, how it affected the characters in their marriages, whether it's staying in an abusive relationship or being part of an arranged marriage or running away from a proposal. What was it important to showcase all these different paths for each of the characters?
So I think it was kind of a combination of a few different things. I'm always drawn to women's stories, and definitely I think we find women's stories to often be underrepresented in history. We get a lot of records on men, but less so on what women were going through. And so I always know when I start a book that that's kind of what my focal point of view is going to be. But as I mentioned with my characters and my writing process, I don't really outline. So often the story kind of comes to me with the characters, and I know that sounds kind of weird. But I really do feel like they speak to me and I follow the direction of their story. Helen's story definitely came to me first. And she, for the readers, she is a waitress who is working in Key West. She's pregnant. She's in an abusive marriage. And she's very much at a point where she's looking for kind of a way out. And her story bookends the book. So she's at the beginning and at the end. Mm-hmm. And it was really important to me because I connected with her, I think, first and connected with her the most. And really just in the conversation that we have about women and women's place in society and domestic violence and violence against women. And that was very much a conversation that was happening while I was writing the book particularly. And I was really struck with the idea of what it must have been like back then, you know, when women even had fewer rights than we do now. And the issues, sadly, that we face now were, you know, even worse back then. And kind of the sobering reality of how far we haven't come necessarily in this time period. And so I really wanted to look at that. I think all of us have been touched by stories like this, either in our personal lives or loved ones. And I wanted to kind of examine what it would have been like for a woman like her back then. And so she was definitely really like the heart of the book for me and wanting to honor her and what she represented. With Mirtha, when I started researching, you know, I really learned a lot about the Cuban Revolution of 1933. So Mirtha is my Perez character. Mm-hmm. She's related to the family. She's Beatrice and Elisa's aunt. And her story is very much one of turmoil in Cuba. So, you know, we have the story of the Great Depression, but the 30s were also a very turbulent time in Cuba. And I wanted to highlight that for my readers. It was another one of those things where it was kind of sobering to see the parallels between what people were struggling with in 1933 in Cuba and what they struggled with in 1959. You know, I could definitely see that. And I thought it kind of helped to explain the family and her brother, who's the father of Elisa and Beatrice, what he had lived through, why his perspective was the way it was. So it kind of just gave some backstory and a greater appreciation of how the Cuban struggle has kind of been ongoing for political autonomy and freedom. So that was really what inspired me to write her. And then with Elizabeth, her story is very much the one that ties in with the World War I veteran. So she's coming down to the Keys on Henry Flagler's railroad. She's searching for someone, and her search takes her through the veterans' camps. And I wanted to show the reader what those camps were like, and I wanted to give the perspective of someone who had been through the Depression, whose family had lost a great deal, and who was just struggling to kind of find her place in society.
Yeah, it was fascinating to see all the three parallels of women and then seeing them, like, how they connected to each other, but at the same time, how they actually struggle in this time period and how they were resilient and they came through from there.
Yeah, I mean, I was really inspired by the characters, and obviously we all know, you know, real life women and have women in our families or throughout history who we've seen who've exemplified the traits that the characters have. They do come from very different backgrounds, but I found, like you said, as a writer, I enjoyed looking at the parallels of their lives and how they would intersect and how they would relate to each other.
Yeah, so I didn't realize the veterans from the Great War were sent to the Keys to sort of handle the problem because they came back with PTSD and just looking for a job and you're just going and stuff. And I didn't realize that even though we celebrated these great veterans, we treat them as a problem. Mm-hmm. You know, what was your research to showcase the veterans, how they live? And you mentioned this already, you visited the camps, but you know, what was your research like to just understand, like, how the veterans were treated?
Definitely. I mean, I had a lot of help with the nonfiction sources that I mentioned that did such a good job of covering this. Also, the exhaustive government reports that we have. Ernest Hemingway, I don't include this in the book, but anecdotally, he wrote a piece called Who Killed the Vets? Because at the time, he was very angry about what had happened to them. So there was a lot of information out there. I mean, at the time, this was definitely an event that gained attention in the aftermath of what happened to them. It's just seemingly kind of been forgotten since then. Erica Roebuck wrote a historical fiction book, Hemingway's Girl, that covers it a little bit as well. So I recommend that one if someone else is looking for fiction on the topic. But it's not something in our modern history we've covered a lot. So yeah, I definitely, you know, looked at the sources that were there and tried my best to kind of recreate the camps. And, you know, I think there's a lot of timeliness with these issues. I mean, the PTSD that you mentioned, you know, they called it shell shock back then, but it's very much what we see nowadays. And unfortunately, we didn't have the resources or the understanding back then to get help to people that needed it. Not to say that we do at the degree we need to now either, but
yeah, I think in some ways, what I saw was a parallel of, you know, what is happening in modern society, you know, to an extent, like how we treat our veterans, you know, coming back from war, struggling with PTSD, like the expectation to handle the problem. We're not investing in Radovan's affair, you know, now going through a depression and just seeing, you know, the scene, the joblessness. Like it's a timely book, and it just reflects, like, you know, how modern society is so struggling with it. So let's talk about the hurricane, the aftermath. Why use the hurricane as a defining moment for this book?
You know, I think the overall theme of this book is, and, you know, it's sobering given everything that's going on and what you said about the parallels between modern day and then, is it's the idea of people who are already struggling with life, who are hit by something kind of extraordinary and unexpected that they have no way to prepare for, no way to defend themselves. They're just caught up in it. And that was really the horror of the storm was, you know, I mentioned I'm originally from Florida, and hurricanes now are devastating, but we still at least have modeling, and we have a little bit of an early warning, and we have information that people can have to do the best they can. I mean, we still see devastating effects of storms with all of those tools. But back then, you know, they didn't have that. And that's the thing with the storm, you know, I talk about that in the book, is they go back and forth between it's going to hit us, it's not, it's going to hit us in a week. You know, they just didn't really have a chance. And, you know, they didn't have houses that were built to construction standards that modern day houses were built to. I mean, the devastation in the region was just tremendous. The loss of life, the loss of property, the loss of livelihoods for people in the middle of a depression. And so for me, it really was a book about being knocked down, you know, through all of this adversity. And I always kind of saw the hurricane as that kind of pivotal event in the book. I wanted it to be a slightly hopeful book. I mean, I think that you know, look at these events in life and you try to find something in them. And I tried to find some hope for my characters in what was a very, very difficult, very devastating situation. But I think the hurricane really just kind of represented for me that idea of, you know, just trying to survive basically in a situation where the odds are very much stacked against you.
Yeah, I think it's just like, I think it just knocks everyone down, and it's just like, there's an opportunity to rise above it. And so I think when I saw from the epilogue was like, they were able to rise above all the destruction, all the struggle, all the different things that they went through. Like, they were able to just come together.
Yeah, I mean, I try, like I said, to find some kind of hope in the horrible events that, you know, I often write about and the things that people go through in history. And it is just kind of the sense that it was kind of a forgotten people that were there when this happened, which I think is something, you know, is very relatable.
Yeah. So what are some of your upcoming projects?
So I just finished, I'm actually just finished editing my next book, which is going to be out in 2021. And it's called The Most Beautiful Girl in Cuba. And it is set during Gilded Age and kind of the Spanish-American War. So the end of the 19th century, beginning of the 20th century. And it's inspired by a true story. It's a Cuban heroine named Evangelina Cisneros. She was imprisoned by the Spanish during the Cuban fight for independence from Spain. And her story kind of became this rallying cry in the United States to try to get the U.S. to intervene into war with Spain. She was made a celebrity by the New York papers. William Randolph Hearst and Joseph Pulitzer were engaged in this like vicious battle for newspaper supremacy. And Hearst sort of touted her as the most beautiful girl in Cuba. That's why the title is what it is. And she really became this rallying cry. And so it's a story about her struggles, her case. She was imprisoned. I'm not gonna spoil too much, but it's a really interesting story. And then there's another woman who was a newspaper reporter back then who's working on her story. And then a woman who's involved with the Cuban fight for independence in Cuba. She's related to my Perez family. And she ends up in one of the reconcentration camps that the Spanish put Cuban citizens in. So it's really about the story for the fight for independence and how these three women, how their lives intertwine as history is kind of unfolding.
I love it. I'm fascinated with the Spanish American War, just for personal experience, because I'm from Puerto Rico. Mm-hmm. So I studied that in Puerto Rico because we became part of the United States as a war, you know. Mm-hmm. So I'm curious to see the Cuban experience and how is it different from the Puerto Rican experience.
Yeah, the Cuban story was like really devastating. I didn't know much about it. And actually my family really didn't. I mean, my grandfather lived in Cuba most of his life. And I asked him about it, and he wasn't born that much after, but he didn't really know about the camps. And, you know, basically it was kind of a genocide, over the Cuban people that went on. And so it was really interesting and very kind of heartbreaking to hear about that. But just another piece of the puzzle of learning about my history that I didn't know about.
That sounds like a great job to have, that you get to look at your family history and explore it and credit, you know, piece it together, you know, from going back generations ago.
Yeah, it's really fascinating. I mean, I think that's where a lot of the passion comes for me. I like to learn more, and it definitely makes it challenging as a writer. And, you know, every day you have something new that you kind of uncover. And so that part's very interesting. You feel like you're kind of a historical detective, I guess. So
awesome. Now let's go to your round of book recommendations. This is an opportunity for you to share with the audience what they should read next. What is your favorite genre?
I wouldn't say necessarily I have a favorite genre. I'm definitely a mood reader. It depends on where my head is in that moment. I pretty much read everything. I love suspense. I read a lot of suspense. I love romance, obviously historical fiction, fantasy. I pretty much read everything. So just kind of where the mood takes me.
That sounds good. So who are your favorite authors?
That is always a tough one. I'll kind of go by genre a little bit because that kind of helps. So I would say for suspense, I love Tana French. Mm-hmm. I love her books. For romance, I love Alexa Martin. I love Sarah McLean's historicals. For historical fiction, Beatrice Williams is a favorite. Trying to think who else. Kate Quinn's a favorite. I have quite a few. So it's one of those things where I'm always in good books, fortunately.
That's awesome. So what are your top three favorite books of all time?
Oh, that's another tough one. So I would say three that definitely come to mind. The Map of Love by Adolphe Souif, which is a really beautiful dual timeline book set in Egypt. I would say A Place for Us by Fatima Farhin Mirza, which I just read last year and was a book that just completely immediately became a favorite. Then I'm trying to think what else I would say. The Time Traveler's Life by Audrey Niffenger is also one that I really loved.
I love that one. What has been a book you read this year that you love?
I would say Anthony De Palma's The Cubans. I've been talking about that one a lot, but I finished it recently. I read an arc of it. It just came out this week. And it's a nonfiction book about life in Cuba from the perspective of several Cuban families. And I just found it to be really fascinating and very heartbreaking, but also hopeful in their lives and what their dreams and aspirations are.
I love it. Tell us where you can find you online.
I'm on Instagram at Chanel Cleeton, Facebook as well, and Twitter as well.
Thank you, Chanel, for being on the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
If you enjoyed this podcast, feel free to share with friends, subscribe, or rate and review the show. This is the easiest way to support this podcast. Want to join a romance-loving community? Want weekly book recommendations, monthly author Q&As, and book recommendation meetups? Make new friends? Then join our Patreon community. To sign up, please follow the links in the show notes. What to Read Next podcast is part of the Frolic Podcast Network. Find more podcasts to love on frolic.media/podcast. Thank you so much for listening and have a great day.
Are you an author, publisher, or book-related business looking to reach passionate readers? What to Read Next podcast is a perfect place to connect with an engaged audience of romance and mystery lovers who are always on the hunt for their next great read. Now, we're offering sponsorship opportunities. Whether you're launching a new book, promoting an upcoming release, showcasing a bookish product or services, we can help you get the word out. Let's work together to bring your books or businesses to readers who are ready to discover something new. Please visit whatyoureadnextblog.com/sponsorships to learn more or reach out to chat about the perfect sponsorship or package for you. Thank you much for listening. Your next great reader is waiting for you.